Welcome to the Month 12 Investable ETR briefing that covers the trading period from the 1st of December 2022 to the 31st of December 2022. As this briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations, or bills issued under contract for assets, goods and services supplied to investment quality companies, or credit insured invoices from investment grade insurers. What this means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another. Typically, these tend to be large companies or banks that are household names and they owe money to their supplier. If we are providing finance to that supplier, we call that supplier an originator. We call that supplier an originator because they originate the commercial transaction that creates the ETR that Credit Exchange buys from them on the day it is issued. And this helps improve the cash flow for the supplier or originator. We call this cash flow support trade finance. At last month's briefing, I addressed the issue that we have caused some confusion among our investor base with how ETR are generated for Investable through the use of trade finance and asset finance. As agreed at previous briefings, I would spend some time each month to go over this to hopefully continue to clear up any of this confusion. So firstly, let me begin by explaining that what we are doing today is still the same trading that we've been doing for the past 10 years. And we understand that our recent website and brochure revamp has caused this confusion. Anyway, we believe it is important that you understand it is still business as usual with Investable. And by that, I mean that if you look how we generated ETR back in 2013, compared it to the ETR we buy today, the only difference is an improved quality of the debtor or payer of the invoice. Today, as with back then, more than 90% of our income is still derived from that same simple transaction where an originator is issuing an ETR and credit buys it at a discount. There's no change there whatsoever. And we haven't changed or moved away from AIG Insurance either. Yet, with all our reserves on hand back in June, we did ask what you all thought of discontinuing this, but the general reaction was to keep it. And we will. So when it comes up for renewal in June of this year, it will be renewed as it always has been. So like I said, no change whatever. Now, what has changed is over the last 10 years and has improved even more so in the past 3 years is the quality of these ETR and the significant reduction in their risk profile. And the simple reason for this is because while Patrick and the board have been busy seeking to find better and stronger ETR, we never took the time to explain this and the reasons behind it. At the last briefing, I discussed the trade finance example, which was for the transport of palm oil. This month, I want to explain an asset finance transaction and look back at the introduction of shipping into our briefings and how we believe this caused the confusion I am talking about. But if you remember, we will still see a ship as a floating company. And we treat this company the same way we treat all of the other companies we deal with who are based in offices around the globe. But with ships, they have customers who hire the ship to transport very valuable cargoes and goods on board, and have customers who hire the ship because these cargoes can be unloaded in ports and then credit must pay for its outstanding ETR. This means there is a priority to pay us so we can release these cargoes as we effectively hold a charge over them. This is an example of our asset finance ETR and how they are generated. To be specific, this is an example of an offshore vessel asset ETR from our new brochure. One example of this is a shipping trade we completed towards the end of 2022 for a shipping company based out of Kosovo. We had already entered into a transaction and purchased the vessel in 2021 for our originator, and they were paying a monthly repayment as part of a lease. This ship is used to transport gas for a gas company throughout the Mediterranean. When they approached Credit again in 2022, they wanted us to fund the upgrade of the ship by installing a new ballast water treatment system, which will allow the ship to gain work in a new category. When preparing this transaction, we created an addendum to the original lease and made it one of the conditions that instead of Credit being paid a monthly repayment, we would now be the payee for all charter income from the vessel. This is now a standard term we insist on for the majority of our shipping transactions, as it means we can settle ourselves first if an unpleasant situation arises. With now all the income directed towards us, we will then pay the costs for the company running the ship, with the balance left to meet our repayments, and anything left over can be returned to our originator. So in short, as all the ETOR income is received into the credit bank account, credit controls all the ETOR charter income, and the repayments are deducted from this charter income before the remaining income is passed to the originator. This feature allows credit to the control over the income and ensures our investors' cash is protected. And as always, this conveys a situation where credit can tailor make a financial proposal that will suit all parties, as we were able to take an already pre-existing legal agreement and rework it to help our originator. This type of transaction, as mentioned, is known as asset finance and is one of our main products we are offering today. It is the continuous development of the asset finance business, along with the trade finance side, where Patrick and the board have successfully led the company to finding higher quality and higher value ETOR, all the while keeping and reducing the risk profile. So moving to some other types of finance credit exchange we'll provide on the, as you'll see on the Investable website or on the new brochure, and that's trade finance. As explained here, credit do buy many other assets than vessels, with quite a number of these being machinery used in mining projects, such as HS2 in the UK. When we buy one of these machines, we only pay 50% of the purchase price and the despondent owner pays the other 50%, which means we own 100% of an asset, but we've only paid 50% of its sales price or what it's worth. If you think about that and go back to the financial crisis in 2008, if all the banks were only exposed to 50% of the properties they owned, most of these banks would have been in good shape, because back then the property market, or more correctly, the properties, didn't collapse in value and lose up to 50% of their value before they started to recover. Albeit highly unlikely as it was back then, if the value of these machines collapse at 50%, we're well covered. But more importantly, the fact that we own 100% of the machine and the despondent owner only paid 50%, they all know they must repay us on time and all the time, or they will lose whatever value they have tied up in that machine. Also, as the brochure explains, just like with my vessel example earlier, not only do we own the asset outright, but we also control all its income too. What this means is that as the machine is being paid by the companies that are hiring it for its services, all that income is paid into the credit bank account. On average, these crushing and cleaning contracts are worth multiples of the value of the machinery. All that income comes to credit, we deduct the monthly payment and send the balance onto the originator. All in all, we're in a very strong solution on our mining finance side and making absolutely sure we get paid in full every month, all of the time. And that's it really. We have asset finance and trade finance. And that's what an investable ETOR is. We're either paying 80% on day one, getting settled on day 73, as you can see from the credit index, or we're getting paid monthly income from the assets that they are earning. And that's why we like the fact that because we focused on these solid trades with strong security and incentives to pay, we are buying better and stronger ETOR today than we were 3 or even 10 years ago. So that's it. ETOR are either part of an asset finance transaction or they're part of a commercial trade transaction. This then leads us nicely to the first figure on the briefing for the month of December 2022, where it shows that as on the 31st of December, we held 99.43 million euro worth of RSA. So an RSA could be described as a bucket of ETOR. RSA stands for revolving sale agreements. So the figure showing that we had over 99.43 million euro of RSA at the end of December means all our originators are contractually committed supplying us another near 100 million euro worth of ETOR in addition to what we already hold. And then the second figure in the briefing document of 66.82 million euro is what we have fully allocated or was actually in the market at the end of December. But going back to the 99.43 million euro worth of RSA, this is the second month in a row of this figure being in the 90s, and the continued increase back to normal levels after August shock of 41.97 million euro. But why is there such drastic changes in this value between months? Well, as some of you may know from prior briefings on this subject, the board took the decision back in 2019 to become more specialised in what Credit Exchange does. Rather than being a jack of all trades and a master of none, we decided the future for Investable ETR was being the best we can be in a selection of specialised industry sectors. This way, we can always ensure our ETR provide the best and safest returns that your investors demand. As you heard earlier, that means the best and safest returns from trade finance and asset finance. Since 2019 and over that time, even though trade finance remains 90% of the income each month or year, as we brought more assets into Credit Exchange, 50% of our balance sheet is now made up of hard assets. So go back to the extreme fluctuation in our RSA figures. That is because until last September, at these briefings, and indeed the briefing document itself, we haven't been including future income from asset repayments we have yet to receive. So the drop in RSA value to 41.97 million was because it did not include the outstanding asset income at the end of August of last year, which stood at just over 34 million euro. If you then take the 41.97 and add another 34 million to it, we're back at almost 76 million euro. Though, as per the briefing document, I'm happy to be telling you today that we are past the 99 million euro mark. And as explained at September's briefing from last year, meaning the September's briefing document and presentation, the briefing document will include the future income from assets on our books from now on. One final word on the split in our business between asset finance and trade finance, where we've chosen to specialize in industries, sectors like energy, mining, shipping, and trade. It's important that I point out that we may have chosen to specialize in these sectors. And as you can see in the shipping case discussed earlier, marketing doesn't really fit into these specialist categories. And that's because we have 10 years of experience in the broader market. And although we continue to focus on specific sectors and types of trade, we still know how to trade strong transactions from household name debtors when the opportunity presents itself. Moving on from what Credit Exchange does and how originators create the ETR from trade finance and asset finance that ultimately make up Investable ETR, I've already mentioned the 66.82 million euro worth of investor funds that was fully allocated, meaning ETR we already own. When you add that 99.43 million worth of RSA, that amounts to a total ETR value, both present and future, of this amount to 165 million euro in assets and trades we have on our books at the end of December 2022. This figure is in line for other months for 2022 and a great way to end the year. Moving to investor redemptions, there was a substantial decrease in the number of redemptions by nearly threefold, with this standing at 1.11 million euro for December. It is great to see the trend of high redemptions reverse, especially as you all know, the originator demand for asset finance and trade finance has never been stronger. Therefore, we need to keep as much investor funds as we can, and it also explains why we're out in the market raising additional investor funds too. Looking to the Baltic Index, which is the index against which most shipping contracts are linked, December's fortunes were mixed. It started December on 1,336, and then continued to rise, reaching 1,720, but unfortunately that is where the positivity stops. It then fell sharply, ending December at 1,242 on the 31st. This is just the latest in a turbulent few months for the Baltic Index, as it has had steep declines and inclines recently. And it has still continued to decline after hitting a two-year low of 962 on the last day of August. We had hoped we would not see this level again, but due to the pressures created in capsize and supermax segments, both these ship categories are struggling for demand at the moment. Thankfully, our vessels are in the Handymax and Panamax sectors, so our demand is still strong. But we would like to see the Baltic Index increase and try to reach a much higher level. On this day last year, on the 31st of January, the index is at 1,428. While it has fallen even further as of today, as it sits at 680, and this is the lowest it has been since June 2020, which was right in the midst of the start of the pandemic. The dry bulk Panamax has also fallen further. It is around $9,000 per day today, while it was roughly $13,500 at the last briefing in November. What this means is that ship owners and charterers who are our originators are not getting as much as they would have previously. I had predicted over the last few briefings that there would be uncertainty within the FFA markets, and I'm glad to be proven wrong. Even though the spot price is now close to $9,000 per day, the FFA markets are up to $13,700 for Q2 of this year, and even $14,350 for Q3 of this year. It is very pleasing to see some certainty and stability returning to the market, with stability being something all industries crave at the moment as we continue to head into inflationary risk and recessions becoming even more evident. In the last few briefings, I haven't been able to discuss the most positive news when mentioning the global economy. With talks of recession looming and continued interest rate hikes, it made for quite somber reading. People questioning why this is continuing and if these aggressive rate hikes will do more damage than good. Nothing summed up what I thought more of the situation than when I found an article that had been put out by Genevieve Rock-Dechter, the CEO of Grit Capital, an investment media platform, and she is also a former $100 million fund manager. She suggested that the Fed or ECB can't for certain know what the outcome of these rate hikes will be, as there's never been anything so aggressive like this before, and it is officially the fastest hiking of rates since records began. This article actually gained the attention of Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla and recently Twitter, who commented that these rate hikes might go down as the most damaging ever in history. But from what seemed to be just a dark cloud covering the global economy towards the end of 2022, it seems to have slightly lifted to show some positivity. I have spoken about the UK, about being in a pretty precarious position over the last couple of months, about their looming recession. Though, at the surprise of many, the UK's results for November actually showed a growth in GDP of 0.1%. Andrew Bailey, the governor of the Bank of England, even recently gave an interview where he believes the country has turned a corner, in relation to inflation specifically. Now, the UK are still on course for an inevitable recession, and rate hikes will continue, with Bailey confirming the expectation is interest rates will peak at about 4.5%. This might just be the optimism from the Bank of England, as the UK still are going to fall into a long recession. Though this optimism is also shared in Europe, with the Eurozone now predicted to avoid a recession this year. It's now predicted to log growth of 0.1% over the course of 2023. This is thanks to lower energy prices, bumper government support, and the earlier than anticipated reopening of the Chinese economy, which is set to boost global demand. This is actually echoed by comments from German Chancellor Olaf Scholz and the Bank of France Governor François Villiers de Galou. Both believe their respective countries won't actually fall into a recession at all, which is a stark opposite to the IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva said just 3 weeks ago that half of the European Union will be in a recession during 2023. Hopefully, this trend of slowing inflation and energy costs can continue during the year, but it does look like high interest rates will still be with us for a while. Andrew Kenningham, chief European economist at Capital Economics, believes the Eurozone economy may avoid recession, but interest rate hikes may still need to stay high for a prolonged period. Though the IMF now have also followed suit with their slight changing in outlook, they announced only this morning that they do not predict the US or the Eurozone will fall into recession this year, with Britain being the only major advanced economy they are actually predicting to fall into a recession. More developments and announcements are actually due this week from other bodies. Yahoo have dubbed this week a blockbuster week to come in the US stock market, as investors await the announcement from the latest Fed meeting, a flurry of heavyweight big tech earning reports, and announcements on job data. Some feel investors are already preempting these announcements. A sell-off did occur yesterday, but this has also been interpreted as investors taking their profit from a very strong week that they had last week. It could end up being an important week for the global economy, and hopefully this doesn't stop the early trend of recovery. So with these first signs of positivity coming from global economy and the returning certainty coming to the FFA markets, it should provide credit the base to continue writing deals in all aspects of our business. Anyhow, in short, we're good on shipping in both asset finance and trade finance transactions that are shipping related. Moving to the market research from Seaborn, their weekly research reports, they summarize important events that will impact markets. In their latest report, they talk about how OPEC have raised $1 billion US dollars from their first ever bond. These funds are earmarked for food security, healthcare, education, and also renewable energy. They discuss China's importing of coal from Russia, how in December it fell, but in 2022 as a whole, it was up 20%. And it also mentions how palm oil is expected to increase its production in 2023. Further down in the report, they confirm our numbers from prior months regarding the world fleet, where both the Handysize and Panamax have both have stocks of more than 15% of their vessels that are 20 years or older. That means that in the next 5 years or less, 15% of the world's fleet in these two vessel sizes will be out of the market. More importantly, the order books to replace these are off by 11 and 4% respectively. To put this into context, of the world fleet, the Handymax and Panamax make up more than 50% of the total cargo ships in the market. With both of them going to lose 15% in the next 5 years and only half that being replaced with new builds, the shipping market should be able to sustain stable returns based on the demands that will be in place on this 10 to 15% reduction in supply. Which goes to confirm the figures mentioned earlier in both the Baltic Index and the FFA markets. So as I said, we're good on shipping and trade and glad we made the decision to focus our efforts in these two markets. As this briefing is about December's trades, trading stood at 16.98 million euro. We are still yet to return to the highs of July and August with over 25 million euro each month. We have shown that we can do 25 million per month, so we must push ourselves to reach those levels once again. The exchange's trading finished 6.217% ahead of all prior year trading years when you compare year-on-year performance. We reached our goal to keep this figure on the positive side for the year and stay ahead of previous years. Looking at treasury performance, it was circa 18% below the total value of ETR traded during the month of 13.84 million euro. This is a very strong performance from all of our treasury team. As said before, we like money being in the market. The more we can collect and quicker means we can get it back out into the market again, and we also like to turn it faster. It's good to see the credit index increasing again slightly to 73 for this month. For December, the ETR average duration figure decreased to 73. Great to see that we're still away from the 80s and in the same range it has been holding for some time. Again, the credit control team is on it, and by this month's results, it's going in the right way. As explained, the credit index has been holding fast at the 70s mark since April, and bar August 86, it looks to be going back in the right direction. As explained at prior briefings, a stable credit index allows for better planning and management by the trade desk. As you all know, the credit index is the ETR average duration or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. The credit index is the cash-to-cash life cycle from the day an ETR is issued and purchased in cash and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash is returned. The credit index is one of our economic indicators that our market, meaning the one we're trading, is back to normal. Moving to the centre of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top 10 rated holdings. The left side list shows what debtors, as we call them, or organisations, owe the exchange the largest amounts of money as of at the 31st of December 2022. And as usual, you can see the HSE remains an all but constant and is one of the two sovereign risk entities for December alongside Cork City Council. Then we have Nestle remaining for its ninth consecutive month. And then we see Tarmac holding for a fourth successive month with Cemex, Scanza Contain, Hansen and Midland Quarry all present as part of our mining cohort. A new entry to the list is SPD Consultants, which was a transaction involving the shipping of coal from Maputo Port in Mozambique to India. This was actually also our largest trade for the period. Moving to the top 10 rated investable ETR on the right-hand side, there's the regular appearance of Venuswood. There's the new additions of Hansen UK and Cemex UK to join Nestle and Tarmac as debtors with an investment grade rating. For the remainder, as none of these were investment grade or have an investment grade rating as of 31st December 2022, this list shows a selection of organizations, regardless of the amount of their liability, as is simply a selection of the most credit worthy. The pie chart below these lists shows a well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. Health and Community held steady in December at 18.42%. This is inside the range it has held for the year between 16 to 19%. Wholesale and retail increased slightly to 28.07%, with food and beverage increasing to 7.89%. Manufacturing decreased to 10.53%, while construction held steady at 14.91%, which is indicative of the numerous mining originators for national infrastructure projects in the UK we are supporting. Looking at the performance section of the briefing document, as mentioned earlier in 2022 financial year versus 2021 financial year, we are actually up 6.217% at €222.4 million in 2022 compared to €209.38 million in 2021. With volumes ending the year 8.19% lower year on year, this means that for a full year, our ETR are now coming in consistently higher in value than they were at the same time the previous year. As stated in the other briefings, this makes sense when you consider who our debtors are and the industry sectors we are focusing on. The credit index of 73 is noted. To finish our performance in December, the largest single, as mentioned earlier, was a trade coal, was a coal trade, which was export shipment from Mobutu Port, Mozambique, to India at €1.25 million, with cargo which was actually valued at $3.85 million. As explained at the last briefing, for the past 3 years, the average value of an ETR actually has risen steadily, and now the average is around the €5,500 mark. And again, as stated previously, this doubling in the average value of an ETR is nothing significant really, as more an indication that the volume to value ratio has been increasing in line with larger trades. As always, we have traded ETR where the value has been less than a euro. And as you can see here, last month, the largest one was valued at €1.25 million. Finally, let's move to the trend section for this December briefing, where you can see that the investor's yield or buy price fell for the month. The line chart started at 2.077% and ended down at 2.024%. As mentioned, demand is lower than it should be and more funding is required, with bank deposit rates at between 0 and 0.5, while investors are averaging 3% from Investable in December. Which brings me nicely to the final item on the agenda, which this month is to address some of the feedback we've received from the survey Ruby recently asked you all to do. If you haven't completed the survey and wish to do so, please email Ruby and she will gladly send you over the link. So the first question we got back was, what happens if there is a major withdrawal of funds and can we handle it? The simple answer is yes. We can handle a major withdrawal of funds. This is because we've actually already dealt with one in the past. In March/April 2020, at the start of COVID, we had €4 million withdrawn in the space of 2 weeks. We were easily able to absorb this. And how? It was because of our LDC, which is the loss in default account. So this currently stands at circa €15 million, and this account is what allows us to be able to offer the on-demand facility. So when an investor redeems their funds that are in the market, we use this account to buy out the investor and take ownership of their contract. When this contract is settled, we return the funds to the LDC. So we have circa €15 million in this account, which we can use to fund a major withdrawal. With our assets under management just around €61 million at this moment, this is 25% of our capital that would need to be withdrawn all at once. So quite an unlikely situation. Next was what happens if money disappears overnight. Firstly, this isn't how Investable works. Your client's funds will only ever take two forms when with us. We have the funds in our account waiting to go out, or they are in the market and a debt has been issued in return. And this debt can always be called upon as your investor will own that contract. So even if the unthinkable was to happen and credit went out of business, any funds that weren't returned due to being in the market would still be retrievable by your investor, as the debt on that contract is still valid as they 100% own it. This is known as true sale, and it creates a sort of afterlife protection for your investors. Another question was about being regulated and audited. So as most of you would know, credit is not regulated by the central bank. And the reason for this is the policy I just mentioned there, true sale. As we do both sides of transaction, so buying and selling, we automatically cannot be regulated, as you cannot do both sides of the transaction. If we were to become regulated, we would have to remove the true sale policy, which would then remove a lot of the protection built into the product. So by being unregulated, we actually have developed something that could be safer. On auditing then, we get in auditors every year. Coincidentally, our audit for 2022 is currently ongoing by KPMG. We have previously also used Deloitte. When the audit is finished, they will sign off on our financial statements as they do every year, and these will be made available to you all. We've previously had somewhat of a special episode of our briefing where we do discuss the financial statements for that year. Next is, can credit fund the increase in trading? As has mentioned in previous briefings, we will be looking for a new source investment in the market through different methods, but Investable, as you know, it won't change. This will be a new product that is tailored towards a different set of mostly professional investors. Then lastly, will rates increase as the ECB are increasing rates? So credit is not a bank and we do not directly follow or are linked to the ECB rate. ECB are increasing rates and will continue to do so, as mentioned earlier, but the ones we hear about on the news are primarily lending rates. While lending rates have started to increase here in Ireland, deposit rates have largely remained the same so far. Our rates are still between 2 and 3% higher than most available deposit rates. For example, only last week, Bank of Ireland launched a new one-year term deposit account for personal customers where they can get a rate of 0.5% and it's capped at €100,000. So this would compete directly against our fixed product, which is 3%, and it's fixed for 1 year, but it's not capped at €100,000. If there was to change, though, we would revisit our offerings to remain competitive in the market. And then to finish the briefing, you will see a repeat of the active RSA or revolving sale agreement of €91.90 million. And this concludes the month's briefing for December 2022. Thank you very much.